You're listening to the Major Pod Network, the only place where your favorite toy store, card shop, arcade, theme park, and arena are all on the same block. Scratch that major itch.
The following announcement has been paid for by the Major World Order.
Hello, everyone, and welcome to a brand new episode of the Major World Order podcast. I am one of your hosts, Billy Peck, and with me is
Hasvar,
and with us is
the Big Jake Bosky, the Sean Kemp of sneaker collecting, the Major Mad Hatter, Jake, don't call me collect. Welcome to the latest episode of the Major World Order podcast, where it's just too sweet.
That's right. Make sure that you're checking us out on all forms of social media, X, Instagram, Facebook, YouTube, all at Major World Order. And of course, if you'd like to contribute a little bit extra and get a little bit extra, patreon.com/Major World Order. Guys,
wow.
It's a couple weeks removed now from Live 19 in Philadelphia. And. You know, maybe, getting back on track, getting things back in order. We're starting to approach the end of April, so we're going to be doing another kind of check-in, watch-along, ride-along kind of thing where we, tune into the live ultimate recording of the Major Wrestling Figure podcast from time to time. That'll be next week's episode.
Yeah.
And then we have a pop culture episode coming to our Patreon, and hey, why don't you guys talk about that a little bit?
Listen, I'll do the music, and I'll let Hasvar talk about it.
So we got a James Bond episode for our pop culture episode.
There you go.
Oh, you're going to go longer with it. No, it's going to do a whole
bit. I ran out of breath.
It's all right. Plus, you could
have done the music. Plus my keyboard sucks.
Well, I liked where it was going. It was fun. So, yeah, a little James Bond action. And for those that are part of the $5 How Big Is It tier of our Patreon, we will post that in there, because a thing that we enjoy doing is, before we record, getting our Patreon folks' opinions on the, whatever it is that we're talking about. So for those that are James Bond fans, this will be your opportunity to kind of tell us your story, and we'll share that. And, it gives us something else to talk about and enjoy. And
there'll be a lot of GoldenEye questions, I feel like.
Maybe. Yeah. And, yeah, so, yeah,
I think it'll be very Pierce Brosnan heavy.
Yeah.
But, I was about to start going into a whole thing, but we'll save all of that
for the episode
for Patreon. So, but no, like I said, we just, we did the Philadelphia thing not too long ago, and something that we always kind of like to try and do is, at these live shows, people that maybe we've interacted with a little bit here or there, but finally had a chance to really talk to or have some fun interactions with, and we haven't had them on the show yet. Perfect opportunity to do that. And Jeff Seltzer is one of those people. So let's bring him on and welcome to the show.
Hey, what's up, guys? Thanks for having me. Appreciate the time.
Thanks for joining us, man.
Nice. So, so Billy, I think we met for the first time at a spring break in Philly a few weeks ago. It was awesome. Great show. Great time. My entire row got blued from the blue urn from the pain, which was a lot of fun to do. I was blowing blue powder out of my nose for about a week or whatever. It was kind of disgusting. Oh, no. Yeah, I don't know what that was, but it was pretty gross. Great time. It was great meeting you. I remember it was just fun. It was a good time. You took some great videos. It was awesome.
Oh, yeah. Thanks. No, it was like I said, I know that was like our first real opportunity to talk. And I, I had a good time talking with you, and then, we were starting to talk about, who to get for, you know, guests over the next number of weeks. And Husfar's like, hey, you know, how about we reach out to Jeff? And it's like, there we go. That's perfect timing for it. So looking forward to getting to know you more, because, you know, I always like to do like a little bit of research and kind of go back through like the major pod group and like see what kind of stuff people post. And it's like, you've like had a lot of what seems like great experiences at wrestling events. You know, you seem to go to a lot. You've been, if not front row, very close, you know, you do a lot of really fun stuff. So if you want, maybe, you know, expand on that some.
Yeah, of course. So again, great question. So thanks, Billy, for that. So yeah, so I am 46 years old. I don't look 46, but my birth certificate says 1977. So that's how old I am. Married almost 20 years. Been a wrestling fan since 1986, I think it was. First match I remember seeing on TV was Randy Savage beating Tito Santana for the IC belt. This is my grandparents' house. They had like 7 channels in Brooklyn. That was all that was on. Kind of ran into it and kind of fell in love from there. For years, watched and watched. Eventually, I guess it was like 95 or so, I was got home from work. It was like 2 a.m, flipping the channels, found ECW on MSG Network. And at that point, I fell in love with independent wrestling and realized it was wrestling more than WCW and WWF. Year later, I started going to ECW shows in Philly. Did probably 50 to 75 shows between Philly, the Hammerstone Ballroom, Hammerstein, Asbury, stuff like that. Did a bunch of that stuff. Unfortunately, ECW died, as we all know, eventually. But from there, basically, any local show I can go to. Totally different experience, you guys probably know, versus WWE. You know, WWE, you can sit, you know, all the way back. Like, I've been to 6 WrestleManias, very awesome experiences, but not the same as sitting first or second row for an indie show. Like, nothing is, you know, the just how you feel, how you experience with it. Meeting wrestlers before and after the show, it's a very, very different experience, and I absolutely love it. Which kind of leads me to, you know, a lot of the shows I've done more recently kind of fell back into some other independent wrestling. Saw Cardona and Myers again a couple years ago. I think it was at GCW and then at WrestlePro, where I know Myers runs a lot of the Creative Pro with WrestlePro and stuff like that. And from there, just kind of stumbled on it and found the group. And here we are today.
Awesome.
Wow. Well, there you go. It's the whole history.
It's a hell of a whole story. Well, thanks for joining us, Jeff. We appreciate it.
Of course. Well, good talk, guys. Good talk. I mean, I'd say from my collecting perspective, it's funny. When I was younger, I didn't really have that much in the way of wrestling toys. The 80s and 90s was kind of a really weird time for wrestling toys. Sure. Yeah, the I guess, you know, the predecessor of the big rubber guys, which just didn't have. Did a lot of wrestling with my sister's Barbie dolls. Like, basically, like Legos, I'd create like a wrestling ring. And they would just wrestle. They had an introduction, all that kind of stuff. So it was kind of like, you know, my early, not really collecting, but kind of playing with wrestling toys. By the time wrestling toys got hot again, I would say like the late 90s with Jax, I was in college at that point. So I was working in the CVS drugstore at a mall. Every day during lunch, I'd go to KB Toy Store, see what they had, what they just got in stock. I was making $5 an hour minimum wage at the time. And basically every day I was working to pay for my lunch and whatever action figures they had on the shelf. At that point, I was like 19 years old, so I was always a mint on card guy because I felt weird at 19 to open them up and play with them.
Sure.
So for the most part, most of them stayed in packaging. Nice. For years and years, I had just crates and crates of them. I'd always joke that I was going to put my kids through college with those action figures one day. Unfortunately, most of the Jacks didn't really, you know, rise up in price as much as I wanted them to. So eventually, kind of traded them in and sold them for whatever I could so I can kind of get some of the more modern stuff, right? So a lot of the Bendies, the Gripper guys. For me, it just looks cooler. I like it more. The, you know, the zombie heels and faces and stuff like that. And my more recent collections is basically getting whatever I could to try to get autographed. Because for me, like, to buy an action figure is fine. You know, anybody can do it. But like getting the experience of either meeting a wrestler, getting it signed, or, you know, again, interacting with like Cardona or Myers, like, or whatnot, and getting stuff signed through that or whatever. It's just an awesome experience to take to the next level. Yeah.
Do you have certain rules for like your wrestling figure collecting, or are you just kind of like me and, well, now not me so much anymore, but go all out and just get everything that you like?
So I kind of got more into this, I'd say, last summer when I fell back into the Facebook group and to the Patreon. So initially it was whatever I could find. Like, I was just going buck wild, see whatever I could pick up. More recently, though, it's probably, like, for the most part, I'm trying not to get, I guess, let's say, deceased wrestlers, because those are obviously difficult to get signed. But for the most part, you know, whatever I think I can get access to get signed, I'll usually buy. So if they put a pre-sale for Bendy's and I'm like, hey, you know, I might see Maven at a show next year, or hey, Alley Catch, I see a lot, or whatever. stuff like that, I'll pre-order and pick up. And obviously with, you know, the Major Bendy's been able to take out the front plastic and kind of trade those around, it makes it a lot easier, right? So doing stuff like that, planning around, like I'm seeing Ally Catch at a JCW show this Saturday. So her figure's not out yet, but I've got probably a Tommy Dreamer, you know, that I can swap out so I can get it signed by her. So when the catch comes in, swap it, and all of a sudden I got an Ally Catch autographed figure, which was cool. Mm-hmm.
I did that with my friend Scene. I grabbed the bloody Sabu.
Nice.
Like, actually, yeah. I just brought the whole entire Bendy, like the Sabu, and Francine's like, why are you having me sign a Sabu? And I'm like, don't worry about it. I'm using the bubble. And she's like, all right, I trust you. I trust you on
this. It's funny. I had a similar thing at WrestleCon a couple of weeks ago where at that point, I probably had about a dozen of them. And then I bought a bunch of the new ones. Like, I bought the new Cardona. I bought the new Tommy Dreamer. And funny enough, I had Shane Douglas sign the Tommy Dreamer one because Shane Douglas is coming out, you know, later this year. Right. Francine's sitting next to him, and he's like, Franny, check this out. And I'm like, oh, what did I walk in and say? What's going on? But yeah, it was awesome. I mean, I got that. I got Jerry Lynn signed. I got Mikey. Like, all the ones that are coming out in the next 6 months, I was like, you know what? When will I see Jerry Lynn again, right? Like, he doesn't really make appearances as much. So might as well, you know, get this one signed while I can.
Sure.
Yeah.
That's cool, man. Very cool.
Yeah. Cool. Another cool story I could think of real quick, actually. So a bunch of years ago, Brian Myers was on the Art of Wrestling podcast with Colt Cabana. Mm-hmm. And he was talking about when he was in WWE, obviously, and he went to headquarters. And there was this, you know, awesome closet where you can go in there and take whatever you want, right? If you work there, you can take action figures, DVDs, and Blu-rays. So going back probably about 10 years ago, I used to work for Post Foods, Post Cereal. We make Fruity Pebbles, stuff like that. Yeah, yeah. Fortunately enough, when I was there, we had a partnership with John Cena. So yep. I was able to work my way into getting a tour of WWE headquarters. Wow. Coincidentally, on January 13th, 2013, which was actually the 20th anniversary of Monday Night Raw, which weirdly enough, nobody in the building even really knew that. Like, what? The 20th anniversary for Raw, they were celebrating a week before, a week after, you know, on a Monday for the actual show. But nobody at headquarters seemed to recognize, like, that date. So I was probably, you know, well above my geekdom, but I really needed to there. So went in there. It was really crazy. Sat down in the lobby waiting to get called in. Bob Backlund was just hanging out there. I think he ends up getting inducted to the Hall of Fame later that year, which is why he was there to meet with people. So finally get called in to meet with my contact, walking around. As I was a huge fan of Beyond the Mat years ago, I'm seeing all these like hallways and offices that I remember from the movie, walking in the elevator, stuff like that, seeing the, you know, the tour that Draws took in the movie years ago. Mm-hmm. Took a little bit of a tour, went downstairs. Howard Finkel's just sitting in a cubicle, which to me was just insane. Because, like, growing up in the 80s and 90s, like, every Meadowlands show that I went to, every Gardens show, you know, Howard Finkel was there, Russell 10, stuff like that. Howard Finkel was the guy. And here I see Howard Finkel just sitting in a cubicle, just working, which to me just blew my mind. Really, really cool. So went over, wow. I introduced myself. I was like, hey, you know, I'm a huge fan. I've been watching you for, like, my entire life. And, like, he was just completely humbled and blown away that, like, anybody who walked in would recognize. Because I'm guessing it's mostly, like, corporate types.
Sure.
And, like, suits that walk in. So someone with my level of fandom wasn't the usual that he would say. Right. So walked in, talked to him a few minutes or whatever. I was like, hey, you mind if I get a picture? He's like, oh, absolutely, be an honor. I'm like, oh, that's awesome, great. So I got a picture with him, talked to him, introduced myself, whatever else like that. Met with my contact because we actually had some actual business to do for a while. So, you know, talk a little bit through that. And then at the end, the guy was like, hey, do you want to take a walk and check out the storage closet? And I was like, wait, the storage closet? Like the one?
The storage closet.
Like the storage closet. He's like, yeah, let's go take a walk. I'm like, cool. So he hands me this huge crate and says, whatever you want, just take it.
Wow.
So this closet is full of, it was like, you know, the Mattel figures, Blu-rays, DVDs, whatever you could think of. So like legitimately, I probably walked out with like two or three just crates of it. It was like nonsense. It was insane.
Was there anything like rare in there that like you're regretting not taking now that you were like, oh shit, like this is worth this much now?
So it's funny, in thinking about it, not really. I mean, at the time, it was just, you know, 2013, so you know, streaming wasn't really much yet. So I was heavy into getting whatever Blu-rays I could get. Yeah. So like any of the docs they had, backups, whatever I could do, any action figures I could find, whatever else like that. Like I was just like a kid in a candy store, right? So I was just happy to be there that I took whatever I could find. But I also recognized professionally, like I didn't want my company to look stupid. So I wanted to make sure that, you know, I was somewhat professional about it, but also, you know, obviously giddy on the inside. So
yeah, and realistic. A lot of those Mattel action figures 2013 would have been the early ones that are like actually
rare.
Right now they're worth a lot of
legends
money.
So, and stuff.
Yeah, sure.
I'm sure I either flipped them or probably gave away or whatever from there. Because I was like, you know what, I went back to the office and probably handed some out because I was there in business. I didn't want to kind of be that guy, I guess.
Right.
So that was an awesome time. And then like months later or whatever, I ran to Howard Finkel at WrestleMania Access 2013. Through work, again, fortunate where I was working, they got us the VIP, like the CM Punk meet and greet for Access that year. So got CM Punk, and then also got another ticket for was supposed to be Ric Flair. Unfortunately, he had a tragedy in his family that weekend, I think it was. They subbed him with the Undertaker. So I got a VIP with CM Punk.
Wow.
And the Undertaker. And part of it, I'm not sure if that's you guys incredible. Were at Access, it was awesome. Access at that time had the Raw and the SmackDown set. So basically, after you met a wrestler, you can go walk up, get a picture in front of the Raw set, which was awesome. And when I go backstage, Howard Finkel's standing there. I'm like, and my wife and I are walking through whatever. And I'm like, you know what? It's been months. There's no reason he would ever remember me or whatever. I was like, hey, you know, Mr. Finkel, it's great to meet you. He goes, Jeff Seltzer, how are you?
I'm like, wow.
I'm like, this guy's a legend. Like, he has no right remembering who I am. Like, who am I? So yeah. I was just blown away. Like, it was super,
that's
super,
cool, you know, man.
Super just nice of him to remember who I was. And I saw it a few conventions after that as well, like Legends of the Ring, stuff like that. And every time it was like big hug. It was like, hey, Jeff, it's great to see you. Which for me, I'm like, I'm just a guy who kind of grew up watching him. Like, I don't deserve any of this. So like, again, he's been gone for a few years, but like, that's one of the stories I look at. And I'm like, wow, this was just, he's just an amazing human being that like, you know, someone who's been around and seen as many things as he has, like remembered who I was, which was insane.
Yeah.
That's incredible. Wow. That's a great story. Like, you know, and that's the thing. It's like, I love, you know, I love that you told it, you know, would we have gotten there if we were asking, you know, so, hey, you know, like, any cool, you know, meet this person stories, you know, you might have gotten to it, but no, that's, man, that is a great story.
Definitely.
I appreciate that. One thing to add also, so again, working at Post, you know, we had John Cena in front of a Fruity Pebbles, so lots of other cool little things too, like Stephanie McMahon came to our office in Parsippany, New Jersey at one point to kind of see how we can work through a new contract. It was just awesome, just kind of the experiences and little things that like people around me are kind of like, okay, she's an executive for the company who gives whatever, right? And I'm like, who gives? I've been watching her like half my life on TV. Like, this is Stephanie McMahon. Like, this is crazy. Yeah, all that kind of stuff.
Hey, you saw her on the Undertaker's crucifix. Like,
absolutely. I'm sure all my colleagues were like, yeah, great. That's awesome, Jeff. Right. Thank you so much. What I will say just to add to that too is, so, I mean, obviously we all know who John Cena is, and we see a Peacemaker, things that he does. He's one guy who, like, what you see on TV and with Make-A-Wish, like, he legitimately is that guy. I think it was probably around like October of 13, I think it was, we had a full day with him to shoot a commercial. So I legitimately got to spend like 8 or 9 hours on set with John Cena, and the guy could not have been a nicer person, like from a celebrity in terms of like a big name like that. He took any pictures I wanted afterwards. He'd signed a bunch of stuff for me. At the end of like the shooting, like he thanked every single person on set. So from the camera guy to the production assistant to us to whoever, like, he went over, shook everybody's hand. It was like, thank you. I appreciate your time. I mean, a week earlier, I'm not going to name names, but there was an NBA player who had a similar situation that we also put on a cover of one of our cereal boxes. It was like complete night and day. The guy was hungover, just wasn't having it, and just was not, you know, into it. I guess he got his money, what it was. But like, John Cena, like, could not have been a nicer human being. Like, amazing guy, and whatever he gets, he deserves.
That's cool.
No, it's great. It sounds like, I mean, obviously, like, you know, these are, you know, great stories with, like, you know, what you do for work, you know, has kind of lended itself to having these interactions. Mm-hmm. Like, if you want to talk about it, I kind of think I want to know more about, like, your work.
Yeah.
You know, like, you're on sets, like, filming stuff, you know, you work for Post Serials and, like,
Sure.
Sounds intriguing to me.
Yeah.
Absolutely. So, real quick plug. So, if you go to jeffseltzer.com, all my socials are there, including my LinkedIn. So, without going through my entire resume, anybody who wants to find me on LinkedIn and connect can do it that way. What I'll say is, so more recently, like, I work in mostly like strategy, analytics, like data geekery kind of stuff. So, without naming the company I work at, but anybody could probably find it if they look online, I work for a consumer healthcare company. So, we sell vitamins, we sell digestive health products, we sell respiratory, like cough, cold, flu, stuff like that. So more recently, it's a little less exciting, let's say. So I work in a group called net revenue management. So a lot of trying to see how we can do more with the same or with less. So working with them to see, create efficiencies. A lot of those price increases you're seeing at stores are probably my fault. Like things like that, right? So it kind of is what it is, or my team's fault, stuff like that. So,
sure.
But I will say just another side story, let's say from a wrestling perspective. First job out of college, I worked for a company that worked with M&M Mars, the candy company. You know, they do Snickers, they do M&Ms. And for years, it was always like WrestleMania brought to you by Twix Peanut Butter, like stuff like that, right? So 2001, through work, I was able to get tickets to WrestleMania 17 in Houston, the Astrodome, which was awesome. So basically, they gave me two tickets. Tickets weren't great. I mean, that was basically what I learned. Sitting 20th row on the floor sounds great in theory of flying to Houston. Just so you can sit 20 rows back on the floor, you end up watching the big screen most of the wrestling show. So it was fun to be there. It was exciting. I mean, everyone says that WrestleMania 17 was one of the best events of all time. So it was awesome to be there. And some of the extra stuff that I got to, so obviously got into Access. And like a pre-show meet and greet with a bunch of the wrestlers. So I got some really cool shots with like, you know, unfortunately some guys who aren't around anymore, like the Big Boss Man, Crash Holly, a bunch of wrestlers like that. So it was a great experience. Like, you know, I've been to six WrestleManias. So any chance I get to go to one, especially in a situation where I got to go for free, was a nice perk and a nice bonus. And at the time it was 2001. So I was like 24-ish years old, 23 maybe. So it was fun to be there. But again, also learned, you know, it on the floor at big shows like that, unless you're in the first couple of rows, you're better off sitting elevated a little bit. Otherwise, I'm 5'8", not a giant by any means. So the second one person stands up, I'm basically staring at somebody's head and I'm watching the big screen most of the show.
Right.
It's the worst. I hate that.
It also got me spoiled too with independent wrestling and the fact that like now I'm at the point where like if I could sit first or second row, like, you know, the Collective, right? WrestleMania weekend. I so much more enjoyed sitting first row for the Collective for every single show than I did sitting where I sat for WrestleMania. Different experiences with stuff like that, but for me, like independent wrestling is where it's at. Like you feel like you could almost be part of the show versus WrestleMania. Again, seats I had were good. My buddy and I splurged and got some decent seats. But with that said, we were watching the screen for most of the show.
Yeah. Yeah, I've never been to a WrestleMania. I've definitely been to a few live WWE shows, including a couple pay-per-views. But, you know, like, I was always, like, in the nosebleed seats or just, like, super far away, never ringside, anything like that. And, you know, luckily I've been to a couple independent shows, actually literally two, you know, one, you know, with Billy and Andrew, we went to ACW in Wisconsin, awesome. And then I got to see one just recently down here near me with and Matt was, you know, headlining with Chavo Guerrero, and it was just like, you know, maybe 150, 200 people there. Not, you know, nothing crazy, but it's like just the interactions that you can have, and, you know, just you feel like you're part of the show in a sense. Like you definitely like. And I mean, actually, I was actually a part of the show. I forgot that Randy Wentworth came up and I chopped him. You know what I mean? So it was cool, you know. And but it was just one of those things. It's like, you know, yeah, like with that, you know, it's more of an interaction. And it's something that I remembered and I had fun with. Versus, like, honestly, my WWE shows, I couldn't even tell you one match on the card on any of them that I've been to. Like, I don't, I literally don't remember. You know, so
I've sat up close in WWE shows a number of times, WCW shows, and ECW as well. The late 90s, and you had to pay for it. So, like, the late 90s, I sat first row center camera side for Monday Night Raw, like, twice.
Okay.
I think I spent, like, and this is, you know, 1998, so you're talking with inflation or whatever else like that. I think first time I spent, like, $200, second time I spent, like, $500. Wow. And that was in 1998, right? So, big money. Yeah. With that said, seats were great. Experience is awesome. You know, I can go back on the network and watch myself as a goofy teenager or goofy early 20s, just, you know, trying to put myself over or whatever else like that. I got some really great pictures, too. But even with that said, though, I mean, like, the pacing of, like, a Raw or a SmackDown is very different than an independent show, right?
Sure.
Everything is being done for the TV audience. And even if you're sitting there, it's you and 12,000 people. So you never really feel like they're putting on a show for you. They're always working towards the hard cam, doing stuff like that. Versus, again, I go to a GCW show or a JCW show or whatever. Yeah, absolutely. It's a very different experience.
Oh, yeah.
Very different. I mean, even GCW obviously is made for streaming, but you never get the sense like they're playing to the camera. Like, they're playing to the people that are there, which is a very different experience.
Oh, yeah. Especially, like, when they're pausing for commercials and stuff like that. And, you know, it's just dark in the arena and the music's just going and the talent's just kind of standing there waiting for, like, 3 minutes and then they're back on. You know, it's like, what is going on here? You
know? Yeah, a while back, I think I saw a video of, like, Kevin Owens, like, when he came back from commercial and he's like, why are they showing a recap? They just saw, like, this legitimately just happened. Why are we watching this again?
Right.
It's like he's even, like, this is stupid. But, I mean, you get a 3-hour Raw show. Nobody's watching 3 hours of Raw. I mean, many people aren't watching 3 hours of Raw from to back. So I guess it's for those people who aren't, you know, channel switching or however people watch TV these days.
Yeah.
I mean, and they got that, those algorithms and stuff figured out, and, you know, how much, you know, they're getting, you know, at this time and that time or, you know, whatever. So they do have a science figured out to it, but doesn't make it very fun for the viewer sometimes, you know, the person in the audience or whatever.
Yeah, it doesn't. But again, like compare that to, let's say, like I went to House of Glory recently, which was awesome. I went back in December and I went 2 months ago. Danhausen against Joey Silver, Sweet Cheeks. Incredible stuff, right? Like nothing really competes with it or whatever. It's just a very different experience. Like you feel, you can feel the hits, you can feel things that are happening. Yeah. It's just very fun to watch, you know?
Yeah.
I definitely agree. I think my first ever indie show was WrestlePro. And I remember like it was Brian Janella, and then they ended up going against the Graysons. And I remember that was the first time I ever experienced like everyone being like, get out of the way, get out of the way. And you get up and they go into the chairs like right on you or right next to you or whatever. Yeah. And, you know, before that, I'd gone to, WWE shows or WWF at the time in like, 97, 98. And yeah, you're in the nosebleeds. You don't see anything. And, we went to Mania in Dallas and we got pretty good seats, but that was just a fluke, I think. But
yeah,
nice. There's nothing that beats that indie experience and getting to like be like, Jake said to in the show.
Yeah, I was pretty spoiled in the fact that like I got to go to ECW at such an early time. I mean, obviously ECW had a small window, but I just kind of lucked out that basically I got my license in 1994. I got a car in 96, excuse me. And then, a few months later, started driving to Philly every 3 weeks once all the arena shows. Like the crazy stuff that I saw there kind of like prepared me for, modern day indie wrestling. I was a Born to Be Wired. So the Sabu Funk barbed wire match, I was at High Incident when, Tommy Dreamer pushed Brian Lee off the top of the scaffold. Like I saw some, I was there when Bam Bam threw Spike Dudley into the crowd. Like he just missed me, like stuff like that. Like it was insane. So for me, it's tough for me to kind of like relive those times.
Yeah.
But at the same time, like, going to GCW now, like it feels almost like ECW, like the Hammerstein show at GCW 2 years ago was like the closest that I've felt to an ECW
what
show
a great
in 20
show.
Years. It was incredible. Yeah. Oh, were you? Absolutely.
Yeah.
Awesome.
I loved it. It was like not even, just Matt and Janela's match, but like everything else, those ladders and it was awesome.
Yeah. It great really energy. Yeah, it felt like ECW in the fact that ECW always had something for everybody, right? You had you had your technical match, you had your high-flying match, you had your hardcore match. Like, GCW is doing a great job of trying to emulate that and do similar things, but also making it their own, right? Like, nobody goes to a show chanting ECW to GCW show. They've made their own identity. They've made their own star.
I mean, it's not too far off.
No, it's not.
ECW, GCW.
Right.
That's true.
doing those shirts in the old ECW logos and everything, too.
It's true, and I'm guilty of buying probably a half of them or whatever, but it's nostalgia always has something to it, right?
Oh, yeah.
Imagine, definitely. There's that rumor that right now that WWE is supposedly bringing back ECW. Imagine they do, but they just buy GCW, and that's the new ECW.
It'd be interesting, but I think the second, the second that once they put their paws into it, as we saw back in 2006 or whatever, initially it feels kind of maybe ish like ECW, but within like 6 months, you've got, who's the champion? You've got like Khali coming in as champion, or you got Big Show against Batista.
Right.
Oh,
it's not really ECW. No, sure, we're the Hammerstein, but it's not the same form anymore.
Right.
Right.
Yeah.
Totally. No, I just like throwing it out there.
Stuck with that universe, trying to see if we can make it happen.
You never know.
I don't know. Half the roster was at
Bloodsport.
So you never know, I guess, right?
Even at Janela's spring break, we kept there's some people in the crowd that kept popping up that I was like, oh wow, they're here, huh?
Crazy, right?
Yeah.
Interesting, I love it.
Definitely.
Yeah. Now it's cool that you got to experience all that stuff, I think for a lot of us, growing up or, at the height of going to wrestling shows or watching wrestling, like the only stuff I saw growing up was WWF. Like WCW came to town maybe like twice.
Yeah.
Like this, I never got to go. ECW definitely wouldn't have came to town, mm-hmm. And so
did you grow up Midwest or were you out east back then? You were Midwest. Yeah. Gotcha. Yeah, Northeast, we didn't get much WCW either. I mean, we got the occasional Meadowlands or like the Theater of Madison Square Garden show, but for the most part, up until Nitro came on, like late 80s, early 90s, they wouldn't even come up here.
Yeah. So, it's just, I love that you were able to take part in kind of all of it to a certain degree.
Awesome. It's been awesome. I mean, as you probably guys all know too, like growing up as a wrestling fan, let's say I was probably like an enigma of sorts in the fact that like nobody around me liked wrestling, right? So it was a case of like, I'd stay up to watch Saturday night's main event. I would watch Raw. But like, I didn't have any wrestling fans. I remember, this is before social media, before the internet, really, or whatever. So like nowadays, the fact that we have Patreons and we have like the Facebook group and stuff like that, so you can, you know, meet like-minded people, is fantastic, right? Because back then, when I went to talk wrestling, I would look in the mirror and say, okay, Jeff, this is what I want to see today. Or maybe I'd find someone occasionally, but for the most part, you know, it wasn't like nowadays where at any point I can go to the Facebook group and see 2,000 people who are all interested in wrestling, which is awesome.
Right.
Yeah.
Different world. It's amazing.
Yeah. No, I had two friends that really were into it. That's pretty much it.
I think I had maybe a couple friends, I don't remember, but there was kids always on the bus that would talk about it, and they always liked the people that I did not like give two shits about. And like, he's like, oh, this guy's the best. This guy's the best. In my head, I'm like, no, no, you know, no, I just didn't even bother. I wish
like, I'm not talking to them. They like Henry Godwin, not Stone Cold.
I mean, they're talking about like Shamrock and stuff like that. Shamrock's the best.
I mean, Shamrock was pretty cool.
He was good. Yeah, he was cool. He was
him and Dan Shamrock Severin, Stone Cold wouldn't, you know, he was part of all that whole thing.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah, it's funny. I didn't really have any like good wrestling fan friends until, I'd say, in college when I was working at a Sam Goody at the mall by where I went to school.
Sam Goody.
And yeah, we used to sell CDs. You know, they're back in trend again, I guess. My daughter tells me she collects records and CDs and such. So I guess what's old is new again, which is awesome.
I still got a place of CDs.
Same.
Yeah, I tell them, like, I collect stupid wrestling figures. So who am I to really comment?
Right.
Buying? So, you know, we are where we are. So yeah, I made a friend there. And then her whole family was huge wrestling fans. Her name was Lori. Her sister Jen, I'm still friends with them 25 years later or whatever. We've gone to countless shows. Not long after meeting them, we went to, I'm not sure you guys ever saw it years ago, the Shotgun Saturday Nights that was at Penn Station. One of the craziest things that I ever saw. So you guys are really familiar with Penn Station, right? The train station in New York City under the garden. So every time I go to the Penn Station now, I still look at the area. I'm like, this is where there was a ring. But legitimately, it was in the middle of a train station. They set up a ring. You guys have probably seen footage at some point of like The Undertaker tombstoning, I think it was Triple H on an escalator, and then he comes straight down or whatever. It was an hour show. It was fantastic. It was crazy. It was a free show. It was basically show up early, just find a spot. There weren't any seats because it's the middle of a train station. So went with them for that, which was incredible. After that, years later, when WWF New York opened up, I used to go to pay-per-views to watch there, which was insane. Mm-hmm. It was a really great deal. It was like 100 and maybe 120 bucks. It included all you can eat food. It included you'd watch the pay-per-view on the screen and you got the chair.
Wow. That's a hell of a deal.
This was 1999, 2000.
That's like $150, $200 now.
Basically, yeah.
Yeah.
And the great hack that we had also was you'd get the chair. And then after the show, we'd leave the restaurant, go to the train station. While waiting for the train, we just, you know, open the chair and sit down and wait for our train to show up. So it's in the train station. So, you know, cool stuff like that. So, you know.
Damn, that would never happen anymore today. They wouldn't do any. That's so cool.
Yeah,
you get to live it.
Yeah, it was fun. Like I feel like I've lived like a lot of different like wrestling lives. I mean, I was born at a good time, right? I often say that I was born too early because I'm a Gen Xer, but I feel like a millennial in the fact that I'm technology and stuff like that. Yeah. But the fact that, you know, I went to, you know, I watched some wrestling in the mid to late 80s. I lived through the ECW times, all the independent stuff in the last 20 plus years or whatever. You know, seeing and meeting a lot of wrestlers before they were a name. Like, I got a picture with Steve Corino back in like 1998, which for me just like blows my mind that like I was able to see him at a small independent show with like 100 people, got a picture with him, and here we are 25, 30 years later. I got a picture with Colby Corino recently at a show. So it's just awesome things to kind of experience, you know?
Yeah. And I mean, and maybe there is a spot in there, but it feels like, did you never take the break that a lot of us did?
Oh, I absolutely have. So, no, 100% I have. I mean, like, the 90s wrestling was very hit or miss, right? Like, early to mid-90s, like, when Raw started and such. Plus, I started high school, and, you know,
Jake's like, that's girl. What it was the best. What are you talking about?
That's when wrestling was real, damn it.
yeah, you know, you start high school, all of a sudden you're interested in girls, and things are happening, whatever, so you get a little distracted. You know, kind of fell out of it, but then fell back into it eventually. Years later, I think it was probably like 05-ish or so when like the Ultimate Fighter came on TV. I started kind of growing tired of it. So I started watching more UFC and then a little less wrestling. Then working for Post Serial kind of got me back into wrestling. I'm like, hey, I can meet a wrestler and we've got a partnership. So why not get into it again? Excuse me. then honestly, for a number of years, I got out of it again once they started pushing Roman Reigns big time. Because for me, it just wasn't. I think it was probably right around the time the Philadelphia Royal Rumble where they brought in The Rock.
Well, yeah, that first big Roman Reigns push was it was too forced and not he wasn't ready or whatever. It's not like what we got later. So I get it.
Yeah, so the challenge for me was, so like at that point, I kind of lost that part of wrestling, but I got more into indie wrestling at that point. So then last summer, a buddy of mine was like, hey, let's go to Philly, let's do all the stuff, let's go to WrestleMania. I'm like, sure, that sounds great. And another friend was like, oh, the Bloodline is awesome. I'm like, oh, it's led by Roman Reigns. I don't really care about him. He's like, no, he's awesome now. And I'm trying to watch. Like, I never really got into it because like, I never really saw the full evolution of it, right? So like, I saw when I didn't like him because he was being pushed hard. And then all of a sudden, you know, while I'm not watching, he does some cool things I'm being told. So I never really kind of like, you know, got to it, I guess.
Yeah.
Yeah. And that's the thing. Like, I think to appreciate or, you know, have any sort of, you know, liking of the Bloodline within the last, I don't know, year or whatever, you had to kind of see the start of it.
Right.
Because that's when Roman Reigns was on fire. And just constantly doing things, and then it became the he's never there, blah blah, you know, that whatever. So yeah, if you kind of started coming in, then it's like I still don't care about this guy.
Right.
Yeah, so I get it.
So as a fan looking at it now, like, okay, so Roman lost at Mania, Roman's now gone. So I'm like, you know what? Okay, it's good enough for me now because I never really got into the character.
Yeah.
So for me, I'm okay with him going away at this point. But again, I'm sure he's a great guy. I'm sure he's a nice person.
Oh, I mean, look,
but you know,
we're not all gonna like the same stuff, or you know. The way it goes, you know, you're not being a dick about it.
No, try not to be.
Fine. Of course. You know,
I'm with you, Jeff.
Another cool experience that I had, not really collecting related, but in 2015, I did the Performance Center All Access. I'm not sure if you guys ever heard about it. It was almost like wrestling, like fantasy camp, where basically it was a full day at the Performance Center down in Orlando. Got there, basically you sign, quote, a one-day contract. So I walk in and, you know, Matt Bloom's sitting there getting ready to sign a contract with you. This was before, you know, they're taping shows there. So it was, you walk in there, it was like six rings. So watched some training throughout the day, met a bunch of the guys, did like some fantasy play-by-play. Got to actually talk to some of the wrestlers. I mean, this is 15, so like Bailey was still there. Who else? Like Kenta was there at the time. You know, Cardona's buddy Mojo was there. Adam Pierce was just a trainer at the time. For me, I was super excited because a lot of the guys that I grew up watching or hearing about were there was trainers, right? So Terry Taylor was there, Robbie Brookside was there, Sarah Del Rey was there. So it was just an awesome experience. And then at the end of the day, they put on a show for the 20 or so of us that were there. So it was eight matches. They try to integrate all of us into the matches somehow. So I got to do commentary for a match. Other people got to be like managers for a match, like, stuff like that. Like, I don't know what they ever did with the tape or the show, or if they ever, they probably have it in the archive somewhere. But it
was just
going to
ask, like, did you get like a copy of your experience, you know, or
So we didn't get a copy of the actual show. Like, they put up like a 10-minute like highlight reel, so like I was able to get like a video that like I'm in some random clips. I remember Chad Gable at the time, he had the towels, like I don't know, Ready and Gable or something like that, or whatever.
Yeah, Ready, Willing and Gable. Yeah,
that was it. Yeah, so at one point, like they had like a question session. I was like, hey Chad, can I get one of those towels? He's like, sure. And like 9 years later, I still haven't gotten the towel. So I was kind of pissed. You know, whatever. But so I got a, like a highlight video of the day. I have a bunch of pictures of me in the ring with the Performance Center sign in the background, which was cool. There's a picture I really love where basically like all the wrestlers that were there, as well as all the fans that paid to be there. It's like a shot like at the front entrance. And like, I'm literally front and center. So it's like me, a bunch of fans next to me. You've got like a bunch of the refs there. You've got like Bailey here. You've got the Iconics or whatever, like all sorts of stuff like that. Just for me, it's a very surreal experience to kind of have that. And just got a bunch of selfies with the wrestlers afterwards. They're like, okay, you know, make it quick, but you can get selfies with whoever you want. So whoever I could find, Enzo was there. You know, everybody could think of that was, you know, in NXT in 2015, was just hanging around.
Wow. That's, man,
that's awesome.
It was an awesome day. It absolutely was great.
You know, and it just took me back to that obviously not your moment, that moment in time of NXT 2015, and it's just like, oh my god, like kind of re-realizing
that's
like
a roster. That's a good roster.
I mean, that was just before
Sami Zayn.
Sammy
was there. I think Sammy was either rehabbing or he was still there or something. Sammy was there though, definitely.
It was,
and we
just
actually
as they like started Dustin doing their takeovers and stuff.
Yeah, absolutely. Like, it was like years or so into it, because I think the takeovers in NXT started early 14 with a network. launched. So they might have been doing the takeovers or like whatever monthly or quarterly events around that time. Even Dustin Rhodes, he was there rehabbing because he'd been out for a while. We were completely shocked. We saw just you know, gold dust in the ring, just kind of training and stretching out and such like that. So there's some really weird, random just kind of appearances there.
Yeah, that's awesome.
Wow.
Love that.
Yeah, so much fun.
Wow.
So much fun.
Yeah, for sure. I see, I'm pretty sure it's autographed, your Rise and Fall of ECW poster in the background.
Yes. So, yeah, I back, I want to say this is probably around, like, it's right after the DVD came out, like 05-ish or so. WWF.com or E.com would sell, just like, on auction, they had, like, stuff. So this, weirdly, it was like $100 for the poster autographed by basically all the guys they had under roster. So they had, you know, Nova was there, Al Snow was there, Eddie Guerrero, like Benoit probably signed it, I'm thinking. Like anybody could think of probably signed it.
Jeez.
Which was just amazing. I mean, not sure if you guys have probably seen it, but it's like, for me, it's one of my favorite wrestling docs. It was just so well done.
Oh, yeah.
And so to have that, I got it framed. I was like, this is what I need. Another quick story I just thought of also, which is actually pretty good. So the auction site they had, like, so got that wrestling poster autographed, really cool, whatever. It was December of 04. So December 2004. I just got married like 2 months earlier. And they had an auction. It was two tickets for Madison Square Garden. This is second row for a house show. It was like on a weekend or something like that. Meet Rey Mysterio before the show. So I was like, okay, so I bid on the auction, and I guess there weren't a lot of people looking for two seats. So I think it was like $120. My wife and I won the auction, so we got it. Took a train over to the city, went to the show. Before the show, went backstage, we're waiting for Mysterio. They're like, okay, it's like December or something. So they're like, okay, Ray's running late, so we'll see who else we can get for you. So first, like, Kurt Angle comes out. Like, oh, this is awesome. So I got a picture with Kurt, got an autograph. Then Eddie Guerrero comes out, got a picture with Eddie. Got to meet with him briefly. And then eventually Ray comes out, which was obviously awesome. Got him to sign an action figure that I had, stuff like that. So we go sit down to our seats, second row ringside, awesome seats. Literally sitting right next to us is Rey Mysterio's family. So I knew this because the DVD just came out, the Rey Mysterio documentary. So I recognize his wife, I recognize his daughter, and obviously a very young Dominic Mysterio. So legitimately for this house show, you know, Dom was probably what, like 7 years old, sitting right next to my wife for the entire show, which, you know, that's if you go crazy. In a time machine, you would say, hey, I wish I could get a selfie with this person, but, you know, getting one with a 7-year-old would be a little, you know, a little weird.
Oh, yeah. Hey, and this, can I get a picture with Rey Mysterio's child?
Yeah, that's not weird, right?
Right.
And again, this was probably about 6 months before Dom had his big thing on TV with Eddie, so
right.
You can almost make a case for it at that point, but in December before, he was just a kid. Sure. He's a civilian. It's completely weird at that point. So we're like, you know what? It's cool. We saw them, you know, whatever. So it was fun.
Yeah, it's awesome.
Yeah, absolutely.
You know what you should do is now you get that Dominic Mysterio build a figure.
Yeah.
Yes.
You get a custom Jeff Seltzer. Oh, you put him up in your fig fed.
Side by side.
Yeah. Recreate that moment.
Absolutely. Go for my wife, get one of Ray's wife, Ray's daughter.
Yeah.
Wouldn't be weird at all, but yeah, absolutely. Oh,
reconstruct the whole meet and greet.
Funny thing was, before the show, like when they brought out like Kurt and Eddie for us, whatever, like this was, what, about a year or so after like Paul London had his big thing, like Ring of Honor. And so like for me, like my big thing was like, hey, Rob Van Dam's at the show, Paul London, like, those are the guys that I was hoping they would bring out to meet us.
Yeah.
So while I was excited at the time to meet Eddie, and obviously in hindsight, super excited because chances were limited after that. Like a lot of the indie guys or the Ring of Honor guys that I was really hoping they'd bring out, like, you know, again, Van Dam, who I grew up watching in ECW, or Paul London, who, you know, I was at his last Ring of Honor show in 03 when he fought, I think, with Samoa Joe for the title. So for me, I even wore like a Ring of Honor t-shirt to the show, hoping like, hey, somebody's going to see it and say, hey, cool shirt, kid, or whatever like that.
Yeah.
Didn't quite work out that way. But I mean, getting Kurt and Eddie and then Ray was, you know, a nice, you know, consolation, I guess, let's say.
You know, 100%. It's like not knocking at all, you know, but you're like, oh, you know, can I get Paul London? No, right. Instead you're getting like, you know, three of like the biggest stars ever.
Absolutely. No, in hindsight, I get it, right? I'm looking back and I'm like, I was a moron, but at the same time, it's kind of a case.
But not really, you know, because that's the difference in people's fandoms. Because like, dude, I loved Paul London.
Sure.
So good. Like, wish he was more of a thing, you know, today, you know, but like, you know, so I get it. But like most people would be like, you know, they'd get Paul London. They'd be like, oh, I wanted Kurt Angle.
Well, it's funny. Like, so many shows that I've gone to or been to, like for me, I think just naturally I tend to root for the underdog. Like late 90s, before the Hardy Boys were signed, when they were doing like squash matches and,
And even, they were in like the weird plaid pants.
Yes. I was super into the Hardys. It's like they're so different. They're super cool. I remember, I think it was like I was at WrestleMania 15 in Philly back in 99. Like, I don't know if they were signed yet or just got signed. And they were in the tag team Battle Royal in the pre-show. And I told my friend, I was like, the Hardys have to win this. This is them. I mean, in hindsight, they had zero chance of winning. But I was like, man, the Hardys have to win this one. Or they're, you know, they're probably one of the first ones out, them in Public Enemy at the time. So, you know.
Yeah. Well, and look, I think, you know, obviously everybody's story is different, you know, but I think that's why a lot of us are here, you know, is definitely. Matt and Brian, you know, even, you know, with the ups and downs or whatever, they were those underdogs of WWE, you know, how so many of us became fans of them and appreciated them. Cause you can, you know, the early version of the Hardys, you know, you could see like, oh man, these guys are really good. Like, you see that there's this potential of something, so you root for that.
Right.
Yeah, absolutely. Like, I feel bad that I missed the whole Edgeheads era, because that was the time when I kind of got into UFC, so I missed a bunch of that. You know, Major Brother is at ECW, whatever else like that. But what I'll say is, like, when I got back into wrestling at 11, like, that was when, like, you know, Matt was, like, I'd say almost at his peak at that point, right?
Yeah.
So I went to, through work at the time, I got to Survivor Series at the Garden in 2011, which was awesome. Pre-show, I got into a meet and greet, and that's where I met Brian for the first time. So I got a picture with Brian pre-show. It was November of 2011, which I got him to sign years later, which I was super excited about.
Love that.
And then a year later, I went to a show, I think it was Raw, maybe at the Prudential Center, and they had Matt, you know, this is a year after his, you know, his huge rise, let's say, and then they kind of lost interest in him. I met him at the merch stand out in the parking lot. He wasn't selling t-shirts, but he was sitting like in the merch truck, just kind of posing for pictures with fans. Which was awesome. Like, at the time, I was a fan of his, so just getting a picture with him, I was super excited. So really excited that, you know, years later, like, just seeing the people they are, seeing, you know, that they are the wrestling geeks that we are, right? They love collecting, they love watching. You know, as big a fan of ECW as Brian is, like, I love seeing that. Like, someone else I can connect with that we have similar interests and similar, you know, backgrounds from a wrestling perspective.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Oh, man. There's
some crazy stuff, man.
I feel like we're just scratching the surface
here. Right.
Yeah, I can give you another one if you want real quick. Okay, cool. So I mentioned late 90s, I sat first row for Monday Night Raw a couple of times. So I sat first row, I think it was July of 98 at the Meadowlands. If you see a dork wearing a Rangers jersey, which I was a Rangers fan back then, that would be me. And then again in October of 99, basically the same seat, first row wearing a Rangers jersey, which I've since converted to a Devils fan. That's another story altogether. So there was one shot, like, as soon as Raw goes on the air, like, it was a surprise because Shawn Michaels, I don't think it was on TV that much at the time. Shawn Michaels comes out, his music hits, and they start like panning the crowd. As soon as they pan the crowd, like, I jump at the camera as it's going towards me. And, you know, think that's cool. It looked cool on TV or whatever. Little did I know, 6 months later, that was used in a commercial clip. So I was at college at the time. I was a senior in college. And we're just hanging around the house, or whatever. And one of my roommates is like, "Seltzer, you're on TV. What's going on?" I look in, or whatever. And I just missed. I'm like, "What are you talking about?" He goes, "Yeah, it was a commercial for Sunday Night Heat." So I was able to tape it eventually. Basically, it's a 30-second commercial for Sunday Night Heat that was on for like 6 months or 9 months, like every week, generally every Sunday night before Heat was going to go on. And it was basically every wrestler you could think of: Mankind, Triple H, whoever else like that, and me. Just me jumping at the camera. There's no good reason why I should be in that commercial, but for some reason, I guess they liked the shot or they thought it was cool or something like that. And so legitimately, like, every week right before Heat went on the air, you saw a commercial and you saw me jumping at the camera, which I was like, wow, this is, you know, 20, 21 years old. I was just blown away. I was like, wow, this is awesome.
So there's going to be a documentary on the rise and fall of Sunday Night Heat, and you're going to be the
rise and fall of or something. Yeah.
They're going to come and interview you.
That's awesome.
Oh my gosh, that's awesome.
There's another one. So similar situation. I was wearing my Rangers jersey. Living Dangerously in 98. So not sure if you guys remember. That was where Bam Bam and Taz had their match. They went through the ring for the first time. It was huge, right?
Oh, yeah.
So there's a spot where the two of them are fighting in the crowd. I think they were waiting for probably the gimmickry to happen, you know, underneath the ring. They had to break up, whatever else like that. So there's a spot where, like, the two of them are going at it back and forth in the crowd. And I'm standing literally right between them, like, yelling and screaming at them. Security's like holding me back because they think I'm going to do something. I'm 5'8", 140 pounds. I'm doing nothing, right? With Bam Bam Taz right there, I am not a threat whatsoever, but they don't know, whatever. Like, it was used in lots of things. I think I might have seen that footage, like, in the Beyond the Map movie. Like, it's just random stuff. It just popped. It was in Dark Side of the Ring for Bam Bam, I think it was. about a year or two ago when that was on. Yeah. One of my friends texted me and was like, hey, Jeff, you're on TV again. I'm like, really? like, yeah, check this out. So I went back and watched it. I was like, oh, there I am. Yeah.
Damn.
So it's one of those things that just kind of like, it's going to outlive me. Like at my funeral, it's just going to be just random clips of me. Like,
clips of you at wrestling shows.
Basically,
you're,
yeah.
You're a part of WWE history.
Well, yeah. Right. And like, I always kind of wonder, like, obviously, you know, you get the, I don't know, the people that have almost become characters of fans and whatever, you know, based off of those moments. But like, you know, you go through and like you watch these intros or like these commercials and like, you know, these people are in them all the time. And like, I wonder, like, you know, how many of them are like hardcore fans like yourself, or how many of them are just a casual fan who never goes back and watches and has no idea that they're like used on television every week. Right. But like you have been.
He was on TV more than most people in the back were.
Exactly.
Yeah. Right?
You know, absolutely. Ric Flair does a stint in TNA and they take him off the damn intro, you know? Right. Like, you know, but Jeff stays.
Yeah, no, I've been super fortunate over the years. Yeah, I've been super fortunate over the years. Like, and again, most of it is dumb luck. Like, when I got, so in the 90s, when I got the two spots for Raw, I think we went through a broker at the time. So we paid up the nose for it or whatever. The ECW stuff, I mean, that was one where I was in Club ECW at the time. So that's how I got like tickets for the ECW arena. It was basically you buy four shows at a time. It was like a subscription of sorts.
Oh, sure.
So usually I got the seats like that. The pay-per-views though, so like Hammerstein and Asbury Park, those were just Ticketmaster. So that's
just found it. Game. Oh my God, I'm dying. That's awesome.
What are you seeing? What'd you find?
I just found you with the Rangers jersey.
Hold on. Send the link to our chat.
All right, hold on.
Let's.
Was that from Bam Bam Taz?
It says WWF Sunday Night Heat 1998 promo USA.
That's it. That sounds like it. Yeah.
And it starts
it's a bunch of wrestlers. Undertaker goes hotter than hell. Like his eyes roll back and all of a sudden he's like, whatever.
It's like one of Matt or Brian's FWF, like when they're talking about the like promo at the beginning. It's like all the clips of the wrestlers doing your favorite moves. You know, hold on, send it in the chat, Billy.
Yes, awesome. Please. You know, that way
for our Patreon,
Folks who pay to watch this thing.
All right, it's
we'll do the work for you.
It's kind of quick, but you could definitely see them. Like it's a good like one Mississippi, two Mississippi, pretty much.
Nice.
Yeah, whenever I play Two Truths and a Lie, I generally use that as one of them. Like that's I was in a commercial that was syndicated for like 9 months or whatever. I was like, oh, that's obviously the lie. I'm like, nope, that's the truth.
That's awesome. I do very MTV cool. Made for mine. No one believes
it. You run MTV Made?
I wasn't like the person getting made, but I was like one of the like they filmed all this stuff with us and then they ended up cutting out like all the friend stuff and they kept in like the more of him going on dates with girls stuff, but you could see me in the background for a bunch of stuff on this episode. I always try to find it.
All right, here we go.
It's like towards the beginning.
Yeah, I'm just going to play the whole thing. It's only 30 seconds.
What's your boiling point?
Yeah, this is the one.
Sunday night, USA.
There he is.
The only non-wrestler in the whole commercial. It's crazy, right?
It's so cool.
Dude, how funny.
That's amazing.
But there's no good reason. Like, Kevin Dunn's
there, and there's no other like, video. There's no other random
Sable's like, there.
Fan shots.
Taker. No. Like,
Billy Gunn. Dude, yeah, that's crazy.
Wow, that's
like,
awesome. And it's, nice
it's funny,
clear.
Too, how much play I got from that also, because I saw, like, more recently, like, I found an old, like, New Age Outlaws Titantron video that I'm in also.
Vote!
I'm really good at these. I love pausing.
What's your boiling point?
And now.
Now. A little more.
Go. There you go.
Blurry version, but...
There we go.
There he is. Oh, my gosh. That's incredible.
You have a 20-year-old Jeff Seltzer, yeah.
That's sick.
That's so anyway. Cool. And a promo with, like, the flames coming up for Kane. Mm-hmm, and it's epic.
That's got all the feels, dude.
And the heat at the end. That's so cool.
For sure.
That is so cool.
Wow. Life I love good. That.
I love that, too. That's so cool.
Dang.
Yeah, great find there. The fact that you're able to find that clip so quickly, that's awesome.
I'm pretty good. I'm usually pretty good. Because I like you'll tell me about these cool things, and I'm like, I'm listening to everything you're saying, but like I have to go and like it's just my OCD. I have to go and find like the clip to see if I can find it and see you.
And there it was.
It's so cool.
That's amazing.
So what shows do you have coming up that you know, Northeast folks will be able to see and hang out with you at?
Cool. So I will not be setting up merch tables. You know, well, my dad will
be dude, 8x10s of your Sunday Night Heat appearance.
You should. I mean,
friends, 8x10s of that. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, so I'll be at JCW this Saturday, actually, in Clifton, New Jersey. Really excited for it. I love CPA, one of my favorite wrestlers, facing Ali Patch.
Oh, yeah.
I've never got to Cap. I've got to WrestlePro a lot because in Rahway is like 40 minutes from where I live. So do that all the time.
You should come to the 10th anniversary show. It's going to be a good one.
After the week and a half I had in Philly, or week I had in Philly, I've got to, you know, try to maintain my family, my marriage. I got a wife and two kids.
Right.
You need time for them.
I have to put in time across the board. So, yeah, yes. So I'm looking forward to JCW this Saturday. Nice. I mentioned on the Facebook group this morning that I just got tickets for Stardom in Tokyo in late June. So dude, I'm super excited for that.
So jealous. That's so cool.
Yeah, we've been planning a Japan trip for years. The pandemic haunted it a bunch of times. So
we're going to do it. Say something about
you put
it
up
that,
today, I
think.
Yeah.
I put it this morning. Yeah. So we basically getting tickets for like anything in Japan, like you can't get it direct, especially in America. Cool. Mm. So I found a third party. It's not like a StubHub. It's like some company or some guy that does it. It's not that expensive either. Like they don't charge you that much, but upcharge. So like a month ago, maybe 3 weeks ago, I sent in the money to the person or the company or whatever. Tickets went on sale, noon today, Japan time, which was like 11 p.m. last night. So I woke up this morning to an email saying, yep, you got your first row Stardom tickets. Here you go. You're all good to go. So super, super excited. So Stardom June 29th, my family and I will be Kirk and Hall for that, which would be great.
That's so cool. I've been getting to a lot of more Japanese Joshi wrestling and such. So I've been trying to, it's hard to like find it to watch. Like you have to like really look for it.
Yeah. There's some sites that I guess I've found in the past, whatever that I've done it with. At the collective, we saw that, Tokyo with Joshi Pro, I guess TJPW or something.
Yes.
Which was amazing. Like I was super excited to see that versus GCW. So when I found out Stardom was there, I mean, I have two daughters, both teenagers. I was like, what can they possibly relate to? I've taken them to wrestling shows, which they've kind of aged out of a little bit. Like they've had their time when they went to shows, they enjoyed it. But at this point, they've moved on to other things, let's say. Yeah. So being able to take them to a Stardom show, which is, the best women's wrestling in the world, probably, in Kurikan Hall. And like, this is the best of all worlds. Like it's 2.5-3 hours tops or whatever. They'll see it. They can see, what women can do, stuff like that or whatever, how awesome it is. And we'll experience it. So I was like, my wife was like, we can go to one show. I was like, that's what we're going to do. So looking forward to it.
That's so cool.
It's awesome, man.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Outside of that, I mean, I tried a lot of conventions because I love just getting pictures with wrestlers. Like, again, I think Billy said, like, he saw a bunch of my autographs and things that I've gotten signed and pictures, whatever else like that. So like to date, so I'm 46, I'm doing this since like 97, 98, my first convention. I've probably got like pictures with like 700 different wrestlers. Wow. It's quite the collection that I have. I mean, again, some of them are multiple, so maybe not 700 unique wrestlers, but I mean, pictures with wrestlers, right? So next couple of months, there's 80s WrestleCon next month, which I'm excited for. Mm. Get my heels and faces slick signed.
Nice. That'll be cool.
What else? There's Wrestle Show New Jersey. I think Billy Starks and a few others are going to be there in like mid-May.
Yep.
Probably Wrestle Bash in August. I've done it the last 2 years. It's been awesome. So looking forward to doing that one again. So whatever I can do, especially anything in North Jersey, there's a lot going on here, so it's easy to do.
Very cool.
Yeah. No, that's awesome, man. I think, we got a lot of great information.
Yeah.
A lot of fun stories.
Oh, that, yeah.
Super cool, man.
I don't know about you, but for us, that was a fun episode.
Yeah.
I appreciate it. Again, thanks for having me. I joined the Patreon last week after Husavar reached out to kind of see what I was getting myself into, kind of get a sense to some research, listen to some old episodes, whatever. Oh, it's fun stuff. And it really is like a, a sister pod, it seems like, of the major wrestling one. So it's a lot of fun stuff, a little deeper dive. So this has been fun listening to it and talking to you guys. So thanks again.
Thank you.
Yeah. Thank you.
I'm in Connecticut, so I spot you sometimes in the crowd, and I'm like, is he from the group? So next time I see you, I'll definitely.
He's the guy in the Rangers jersey. You can't miss him.
Well, not anymore. I've moved on.
From the jersey.
Yeah, you said you're into the Devils now, huh?
Hell yeah.
Yeah.
All right. Yeah. I'm a Brodeur guy.
Nice. Well, you know what? Let's end on a little hockey talk because I don't think we've had enough hockey talk on here lately.
Let's do it.
Oh my god!
After last week, absolutely.
Right. Yeah. So let's go ahead and hear why did you switch from the New York Rangers to the New Jersey Devils?
Sure. So great question. So high school, I found hockey, loved hockey, Rangers fan, obviously. When I was in high school, the Rangers won the Cup in 94. Exciting time. I mean, I didn't wait since 1940 like most Rangers fans. I kind of fell into it. They got Messier, Mark Messier. Huge fans. I was like, cool, this is awesome. 95, the Devils won, but I really didn't care. I was still a Rangers fan at the time. So fast forward, you know, next year, 1995, I go to college. Went to Rutgers College, and there was no cable. Internet wasn't really a thing yet. Streaming wasn't a thing yet. So I probably went through all of college. I lost all of sports because it was very impossible to follow sports unless you got like the newspaper, which, you know, you're really not seeing or catching anything that way. So went through college, lost most sports. Early 2000s, I got a little bit more into football with fantasy football when that became a thing. And then I would say like 2008, 2009, a buddy of mine was like, hey, let's go to a hockey game. I'm like, that sounds cool. So it took me to, I think it was when the Prudential Center first opened. So it's probably like 09-ish or so. Went to a Devils game. I was like, that's cool. You know, whatever. It was fun. Good time. Went to a bunch more games. At this point, I mean, it had been 15 years since I was a Rangers fan. So I was like, you know what? It's cheaper to get to the Prudential Center. It's easier to get to games. It's a different experience. I live in New Jersey anyway, so I might as well become a Devils fan. So at that point, kind of switched over. Obviously, I still have a Rangers jersey in my closet, which is weird. You know,
It's a famous jersey, though. I mean, you know,
I was very famous. Absolutely,
yeah, it's on TV.
I'll put on Whatnot with Brian next week.
There you go.
Yeah, but it's. I mean, it's also weird too, especially because then oftentimes, like when I show old clips of myself, they're like, "You got a Rangers jersey on, but now you're a Devils fan." Like I have a Devils license plate, so like, little things like that. Like, okay, it's just something what it is, whatever. So it just it makes for a conversation starter, I guess.
Yeah, oh, that's cool. I like it.
Yeah.
All right. Well, Jeff, thanks again for hanging out with us. That was awesome.
Thanks, Jeff.
Awesome. Appreciate your time. Thank you, guys.
No problem. Your time. Thank you.
Let's go ahead and finish this thing up. Husfar, go ahead and take us out.
Play my fucking music. I got Galoob, a Hasbro Dusty. I got the merch that drives the marks while the ring-worn gear. They wanna wear it, H-A-R-D, just like Blue Chew. I'm just a major mark, major mark. I'm not a toy boy, toy boy. I'm just a major mark, major mark. I'm not a toy boy, toy boy. Claim all the figs, claim all the merch, like Super Gabby. You already know the Michael Jordan and Scottie Pippen with Phil Jackson. Always scratching that itch. I'm just a major mark, major mark. I'm not a toy boy, toy boy. I'm just a major mark, major mark. I'm not a toy boy, toy boy. Hey, all you major marks, claim all that merchandise.